Coming up on Locked On Dodgers, I'm going to talk a little bit about the latest in the labor negotiations, basically a non-update, but I have some pretty strong feelings about it. And then I'm going to talk about the history of the Waxahachie swap in baseball, which if you don't know what it is, stick around because it's pretty fun. So let's get Locked On Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers. Your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Dodger fans. I am Jeff Snyder of Baseball Essential, and this is Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. I am flying solo today, but Vince should be back with me. Maybe not on Monday, by Tuesday. I'll probably be solo again on Monday because Vince's Raiders are playing in the playoffs this weekend, and he will be in Cincinnati for that game. But I'm here alone today. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. Remember, this show is free and available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube simply by searching for Locked On Dodgers. This is the daily podcast covering the world champion. This is the daily podcast covering the Los Angeles Dodgers, bringing you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue. And you eagle-eyed YouTube viewers may notice a little glitch in the video right then because I messed up and said world champion Los Angeles Dodgers. And I got to say, I can't wait to be able to say that legitimately again. I am tired of the Dodgers not being the reigning World Series champs. So hopefully there will be a baseball season this season so that the Dodgers can win the World Series again and I can go back to saying that. But, you know, whether or not there's a season depends on whether the owners and the players can come to an agreement. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about that. First, I want to remind you, thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. And remind you that when you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. So the owners and the union met on Thursday for the first time in about 6 weeks. Which is progress in and of itself, the fact that they're talking. There was no actual progress made. Basically, ownership presented a proposal, and the players' union didn't care much for it, and they left, and the union will now theoretically present a counterproposal. So most of these meetings, it's kind of the nature of these negotiations. Until they feel that pressure, they're not going to agree on anything, and right now, on January 13th, there's not that much pressure to get the job done. As we get closer to February, there's going to be more pressure because spring training is supposed to start in February. And then as we get into February, as we get towards the end of February, we start thinking, okay, if it takes much longer, we're actually going to have a delayed season or a shortened season. And that's when it starts hitting people's pocketbooks. That's when they'll get intense. So we weren't expecting much from these talks on Thursday. But one thing that was kind of interesting, Ben Nicholson-Smith of Sportsnet.ca, which is in Canada, he reported, he says, I also heard MLB owners offered a potential solution to service time manipulation in their proposal. If a highly ranked prospect within the top 150 on prospect lists plays a full year and finishes top five for a major award like MVP, Cy Young, or Rookie of the Year, his team would get a bonus draft pick. So one of the things that the players' union is concerned about is service time manipulation. The most famous case recently was Chris Bryant back in 2015-ish. He was held down. Basically, the reason they do that is because if you're held down a certain amount of time, in order to count as a full season of service time, you have to have, I forget how many days it is, and it's not, it's different every year. It's based on a few things, but in order to accumulate a full year of service time, you have to be on the major league roster or the major league injured list for a certain number of days. And so teams with their top prospects will often hold them down for a month or month and a half and then call them up. And then they basically get that first year for free because it's not enough days to count as a year of service time. So they get them for 7 years instead of 6 years in the big leagues. Every team does it to some extent. The Dodgers haven't done it very egregiously anytime recently. there's always little, you know, there was talk about Gavin Lux. Were they going to do that with him? Turned out he had enough struggles and enough back and forth in the minor leagues that they never really had to. Who knows if they would have. But, you know, it's a concern among the union. And so this proposal would be basically, okay, if you call them up and they win or finish top five in an award, you actually get rewarded for that as a team. And so it would discourage teams from holding down their players. Now, in and of itself, I don't hate this proposal. I don't think it's great, but I don't hate it. What I hate about it, though, is that it's a good example of addressing symptoms instead of the root cause. The root cause of most of these issues is that there is no benefit to a team. In fact, it's actually worse for a team to finish a season with 84 wins than with 64 wins. If you're not going to make the postseason, you're better off being really bad, because then you get, you know, you're spending less money on your payroll and you get better draft picks. The worst team in baseball gets the first pick in the draft. The best way right now to rebuild is to be really bad, because then you get more draft picks and boom, which means more draft pool money to spend. You know, all those benefits come from being terrible. And, you know, most years there's maybe, I don't know, 15 or 18 teams that legitimately come in thinking we've got a good shot at the playoffs. The rest of them, there's no reason for them other than trying to make their fans happy to actually try to put a good product on the field. And that's frustrating. And so the Cubs, when they held down Chris Bryant, they hadn't been competitive. Turns out they actually were competitive even that year. And, maybe it came back to bite them a little bit, but they didn't really think that was their year, that they were going to be back to competitiveness. And so they held Chris Bryant down. When teams hold down players, it's because the benefits of that extra year outweigh any benefits that would come from having the player on the field at that time. And obviously, Chris Bryant won the Rookie of the Year that year. If he had been on the field for that extra month or whatever, maybe the Cubs finish, in first place. I think that was the year that they made the postseason as one of the wild card teams. But there were three postseason teams from the NL Central. I hope that's right. I should have looked it up, but I didn't. Anyway, but most of the time when teams manipulate service time, it's because the benefits of that extra year outweigh benefits having them on the field. Now, if the draft was switched, I've talked about this before. I'm probably going to talk about it again soon, because one of my big things that I really think they should consider in this CBA, if the draft was tweaked so that instead of the worst team in baseball getting the first pick in the draft, instead that pick went to the best team that didn't make the postseason. And then, and you wouldn't just do straight, okay, do that and then put the postseason teams last, because then you get into the mixed motives of, okay, is it better to have a wild card game on the road or to have the first pick in the draft? And so, you'd go, okay, best team to not make the playoffs gets the first pick. Second best team to not make the playoffs gets the second pick. Worst team to make the playoffs gets the third pick, kind of like that. And you stagger it. So you'd still end up with the best team in baseball would still be picking near the end. But guess what? So would the worst team in baseball. And if you were rewarding teams actually trying to win, even if they didn't have a chance at the playoffs, but trying to win 84 games so that they're, putting a product on the field that their team enjoy or their fans enjoy going to watch, that fixes the service time manipulation, because no team's going to do that. It also fixes all of the financial issues that players are worried about, because teams would actually be incentivized to spend money on free agency, all that. Now, all those are reasons why the ownership would fight against this idea, but that's why you negotiate these kind of things, because every negotiation, every CBA is full of things that ownership didn't want, but they settled for, and things that the players didn't want, but they settled for, because that's what compromise is. That's what negotiation is. And eventually there's going to be compromises made on all of this stuff. So they might as well do this right and tweak the draft order instead of trying to get heavy handed and like address this one symptom of roster manipulation. Do this, the fix that addresses the root cause and fixes a lot of different things. That's my thoughts. on that. That's it for our current event stuff. I'm going to come back in a minute. I'm going to talk about the Waxahachie swap. I'll explain what that is if you don't know. And we'll talk all about it as it relates to the Dodgers. So thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. And keep it Locked On Dodgers. Hey, guess what? New year, New Year's resolutions. Are you a little bit overweight? I'm a little bit overweight, and then a little bit more, and then a little bit more. Are you trying to get in better shape, be healthier? Guess what? Built Bar is the answer, or at least part of the answer, because it is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, or maybe even better. It makes it so much easier to stick to your resolutions, because when you want a Butterfinger, how about instead you grab a Built Bar? Just as good, and without all the guilt, because instead of having hundreds of calories and dozens of grams of sugar, it's got like 130 calories and 4 grams of sugar. Much better, right? Oh, also a bunch of protein, like 17 grams. So instead of eating a candy bar that makes you feel like a big fat fatty, you can eat a Built Bar that's covered in 100% real chocolate, and it makes you feel like the opposite of a big fat fatty, a nice healthy person who's doing his or her best to be as healthy as possible. So go to built.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you will get 15% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. Okay, so the next thing I want to talk about, I was doing some preparation. I'm going to be a guest on that podcast. I've mentioned it a couple times, the 1988 Tops podcast. I'm going to be a guest on that show in a week or two, talking about the Mike Scioscia card in that set. And, you know, long story short, I ended up, because of that podcast, I was thinking about the Waxahachie swap. The Waxahachie swap is when a manager will come out and take his pitcher out of the game, but not take him all the way out of the game, just take him off the mound and put him in the field somewhere, bring in a new pitcher, and then bring that, the original pitcher back in to pitch. Because the rules say you can come back into pitch after you've left pitching as long as you stayed in the game. And so managers used to do this a little more often, like in the early days of baseball, the early 1900s, the first couple decades of the 1900s. And then it kind of went away. And then in like 1951, I think, Manager Paul Richards, who was from Waxahachie, Texas, he was known as the Wizard of Waxahachie. He brought back the strategy, did it 3 or 4 times in the 1950s. And Rob Nyer, who a former guest of this podcast, friend of mine, baseball writer, historian, all around good guy, it's kind of one of his pet projects. And he compiled a list of all the times this has happened in baseball and came up with the name. It was based on a suggestion from one of his readers about a dozen years ago, and they decided to call it the Waxahachie Swap in honor of the Wizard of Waxahachie, Paul Richards. And so it doesn't happen a ton. In fact, it's on the spreadsheet that Rob Nyer has put together. There's like 78 instances of it. The last 4 have all been by Rays manager Kevin Cash, believe it or not. Twice with Adam Kolarik in 2019, and then with Sergio Romo and Jose Alvarado in 2018. Joe Maddon's also done it, looks like 5 times in his managing career, with 5 different pitchers. Steve Cishek, Brian Dunsing, Travis Wood, Spencer Patton, Travis Wood again. So 5 times with 4 different pitchers. It's been done, you know, 80-ish times, but only once by the Dodgers. And I guess I should say less than the 78 that are on the spreadsheet, because there's 1 Dodgers Waxahachie swap listed, and then there are 3 Brooklyn Dodgers Waxahachie swaps listed. But I actually did some research, and none of them were actual true Waxahachie swaps. And I'm going to talk a little bit about those 3 from Brooklyn, then I'm going to take a break, and then I'm going to come back and I'm going to tell you about the one time it actually happened for the Dodgers back in 1991. So the first 2 Waxahachie swaps listed for the Dodgers were both from July of 1918 with the same pitcher, Jack Coombs. Manager Wilbert Robinson, who, remember back at the time, the Dodgers were actually known as the Robins, named after Wilbert Robinson, their manager. Kind of interesting, I actually came across a news story a year or so ago. Wilbert Robinson was actually on the hot seat less than a year into his managerial career with the Dodgers. He almost got fired. I think it was maybe Zach Wheat who wanted his job. He wanted to be player manager, And the Dodgers almost went for it. And then Wilbert Robinson ended up being known as Uncle Robbie. He was one of the most beloved managers in Dodger history, and they named the team after him for a while. So in 1918, July of 1918, twice Jack Coombs pitched and also played the field in the same game. But I don't think either of them was really a legit Waxahachie swap, simply because they he didn't leave the mound, go into the field, and then come back to the mound. He just played both positions in the game. He pitched and played the field, whether by necessity or otherwise. And so I think he was more just a case of a position player pitching or a pitcher playing a position, but not a true Waxahachie swap either of those times. The other one was listed was 3 years later when Wilbert Robinson did something similar with Clarence Mitchell. And Mitchell, it was kind of interesting. He played first base, but he didn't, as far as I can tell, looking at the newspaper reports, he didn't do the same. He didn't do the swap where he left the mound and then came back. This says Ray Schmant tried to play first base for the Superbas. That was another name for the Dodgers back then, the Superbas. Yesterday, for the first time since he was cracked on the back of the head by a pitched ball by Wallace Hood before the second Chicago game. So Ray Schmant, Superbas first baseman, had been out with a head injury, and then they had him try to play first base. It says he had to seek the shade after three innings, so he only lasted three innings, and Clarence Mitchell, the southpaw pitcher, covered the bag until he pitched the ninth inning, which is the first time we've seen such a switch on the Brooklyn team for a long, long time. So basically, Clarence Mitchell was forced to play first base because Ray Schmant couldn't handle playing a whole game with his head injury, and he played first base until the ninth inning when they needed him to pitch. So again, not a true Waxahachie swap. And so I think I've decided, I've been looking for, I don't know if you guys remember, a year and a half or so. No, I guess it's been about 2 years almost. Early in the pandemic, I did a presentation at the Sabre Convention, Society for American Baseball Research. I did a presentation. They had to move the convention to being virtual because of COVID and whatnot. And I did a presentation at the virtual convention on Gary Templeton, who in 1979 became the first player ever to have at least 100 hits from each side of the base, each side of the plate in the same season. And then I had noticed that both Baseball Reference and Retro Sheet, the two records of note, had his splits only showing 94 hits right-handed. And I thought, why is that? So I actually dug into the newspaper archives, and I actually proved that Gary Templeton did have 100 hits right-handed that season, and Baseball Reference and Retro Sheet have both since updated their records based on my research. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoy doing baseball research like that, and the Society for American Baseball Research is a great place to do it. Anyway, I've been thinking about trying to track down another good research project to work on, and I think I may have given myself the itch tonight as I've been digging into these Waxahachie swaps to look into the rest of them and see if they are legit. See how many of these 78 are actual legit Waxahachie swaps, because there's always good stories. And as you're going to see in a couple minutes, there's always fun stories behind these Waxahachie swaps. And so even if most of them end up being legit and I actually happen to find the only three non-legit, which I doubt, it'll be a fun project and probably with a lot of fun stories. So I have one or two of those fun stories coming up in just a minute. I'm going to talk about the one legitimate time the Dodgers actually did the Waxahachie swap. It was Tommy Lasorda in 1991 and involved Roger McDowell, and the rest you're going to have to wait to find out when I come back. I want to thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day, and keep it Locked On Dodgers. Hey, betonline.ag would like to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue our march to the playoffs and beyond. BetOnline remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagering action for 2022. New year and a new updated desktop and mobile website. To sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit, just use our promo code LOCKEDON to get started. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. Okay, I'm back. I'm going to talk about the Waxahachie swap, the one time the Dodgers actually did it. And this came on October 1st, 1991. I didn't remember this game specifically. I have pretty strong memories of late in the 1991 season, because that was when the Braves overtook the Dodgers in the National League West. The Braves had come out of nowhere. They were the worst team in baseball for years, worst fans in baseball, everything. They were just awful. And then they came out of nowhere in 1991 and beat out the Dodgers for the National League West title. This was during that time as the Braves were coming back. The Dodgers didn't fade necessarily at this point. In this newspaper article on October 2nd, it said the Dodgers have won 23 of their last 31 games, but the Braves had won 18 of their last 25. Or Hirsch, I just said, this is mentally trying. When the winner of this division finally gets to the playoffs, I don't think they will experience a change in pulse. Basically, they were playing playoff baseball every day. And in this game on October 1st, I told you I'm reading the article from October 2nd, LA Times, so about the previous day's game. The Braves believe if they can return to Atlanta trailing by only one game, they can win the division outright on Sunday, because their final three games are against the last place Houston Astros. They will match ace Tom Glavine with the A's against the Reds' Scott Scudder. Tom Glavine at Scott Scudder sounds like it benefits the Braves. Bob Ojeda, who pitched in this game, said, if they win, we have to win, and if they lose, we have to win. So then we get to the Waxahachie swap. Ojeda says, we have no more gimmies, no more layups, and no more breathing room. And then this article says, if nothing else, the Dodgers have the nerve to go the distance. They showed this in the ninth inning Tuesday when Roger McDowell recorded a save not only for pitching, but for playing left field. McDowell relieved Ojeda in the eighth after Paul Ferries and Jim Vacher had reached base on a single and a walk. After giving up a double to left center by Darren Jackson, McDowell retired pinch hitter Oscar Azokar on a fly ball to left field. This is really interesting. So McDowell came in with one out. And so he gives up a double, but then he gets the second out on a fly ball. But in McDowell's mind, there's still that was only the first out, because it was the first out he had gotten. So then Benito Santiago came up. Going back to the article, Benito Santiago then ended the inning with a grounder, although McDowell had forgotten there were two out, and he threw home, where the alert Socha made the catch and threw to first. So McDowell catches the ground ball, see the guy on third running towards home. He throws home, and Mike Socha, the catcher, is like, well, I'm just going to take the force out. So I guess Benito Santiago maybe wasn't running hard. He was a catcher, but he was reasonably fast for a catcher. But yeah, so Socha took the throw from McDowell and threw it to first base. It was like a double play, except only one out made. So 1-2-3, a 1-2-3 put out, not a double play. So McDowell said, it was appropriate that I did it on Mickey Hatcher night, referring to a pregame ceremony. Mickey Hatcher was kind of a screwball, and so it seemed like something Hatcher would do. This set up an even odder ninth inning, back to the article, with left-hander Fred McGriff due up first. Left-hander John Candelaria was brought in to pitch. Manager Tom Lasorda wanted McDowell to return to the game for the next two right-handed hitters, so he kept him in the game, moving him to left field while Candelaria struck out McGriff on three pitches. McGriff said, I haven't seen that since Little League. McDowell said, I've done it once before with the New York Mets, but on the only fly ball hit to me, Lenny Dykstra came all the way over to catch it and stepped on my toes. Once McGriff was out, so was Candelaria, and McDowell trotted back in from left field to retire Tim Tuffle and pinch hitter Bip Roberts for his 10th save. So, yeah, that's the one time it's happened for the Dodgers. They brought in John Candelaria, a left-handed pitcher, to face Fred McGriff, a left-handed hitter, and he did his job, struck him out on three pitches. But when McDowell said, I've done it once before with the New York Mets, I thought, I'm going to see how good his memory is, because I knew he had done it with the Mets. So I looked, and that game was really interesting. And I know this isn't a Mets podcast, but this is a really interesting game. There's actually video of this on YouTube that I'll try to remember to put the link in the show notes. I wish I knew if I was allowed to share this on our video, but YouTube's copyright laws kind of scare me. So I'm not going to share the video here on the podcast, but I am going to put the link so you guys can watch it. But on this, the time that Roger McDowell did it in 1986, there were actually two Waxahachie swaps in the same game. And that was because the Mets and the Reds went to extra innings. And in the basically the Mets ran out of position players. So you had Jesse Orozco in the game pitching in the 10th inning. And Orozco came in and got into a little bit of trouble there in the bottom of the 10th inning. In this inning, you also have Pete Rose pinch hitting for pitcher John Franco of the Reds. Then Eric Davis, after Rose singles, Eric Davis pinch runs for Rose. And then Davis steals second and Davis steals third. And then Tom Browning, a pitcher, pinch runs for Eric Davis. So I don't know if Davis hurt himself stealing third base or what happened in that game. I'll have to, I should look that up too. Then Orozco strikes out Eddie Milner. And then it's they decide to bring in right-hander Roger McDowell. So with two outs in the bottom of the 10th, they bring in McDowell. He gets a ground out to end the inning. And then in the 11th, McDowell starts the inning, gives up a single, a sacrifice bunt, and then a ground out. So there's a runner on second and two outs. And, oh, by the way, when they brought in McDowell to pitch earlier, they moved Orozco to right field. And so then in the 11th, Orozco is still in right field. McDowell gets the first two outs, runner on second, two outs, and they bring Orozco back from right field to face left-hander Max Venable. Roger McDowell goes out to right field, and Orozco strikes out Venable to end that inning. Then in the 12th inning, Orozco stays in the game to pitch again, and he gives up a single, another single, a double play. So it's a runner on second and two outs, and then he gets a fly out to center by Eddie Milner. And that's the play. They also moved, they swapped McDowell and Mookie Wilson. So McDowell went from right field to left field. So this was a fly ball to left center field that Eddie Milner hit. And when Roger McDowell said, on the only fly ball hit to me, Lenny Dykstra came all the way over to catch it and stepped on my toes. Now, it's not untrue what Roger McDowell said. Dykstra and McDowell did converge. Dykstra made the play, and it looks like Dykstra might have literally stepped on McDowell's toes. The one thing that maybe McDowell is misremembering is that it was hit to left center field. No matter who the left fielder was, Lenny Dykstra, the center fielder, was going to make this play. The only difference is that McDowell was not an experienced enough left fielder to recognize that fact, and so he basically got himself in the way and got his toes stepped on. But yeah, so that ended that inning. Fly ball by Eddie Milner, caught by Lenny Dykstra. And then in the bottom of the 13th, they moved Orozco back to right field, moved Mookie Wilson back to left field, and brought Roger McDowell back into pitch. And he pitched the final two innings, the bottom of the 13th and the bottom of the 14th. And thanks to a three-run homer by Howard Johnson in the top of the 14th, on which Jesse Orozco actually scored because he had walked, the Mets won that game 6-3. So Roger McDowell had two Waxahachie swaps in his career. And one of the times that he did it, the first time, there were actually two in the same game, and it was not your usual. Usually the Waxahachie swap is, okay, take a guy out, and he's going to pitch to one. The new guy's going to pitch to one batter, then we'll bring the other guy back in. This was, okay, the new guy's going to pitch an inning or two, then we'll bring the other guy back in, and then we'll, you know, swap him back out. And the reason that these are kind of notable right now is because they may never happen again. Because thanks to the three-batter minimum, this version that the Mets did out of necessity, because they were out of players, out of pitchers, is kind of the only way you can do a Waxahachie swap now, because you have to, the new guy who comes in, you can still move a pitcher to right field or first base or whatever you want to do, but the new guy has to pitch to three batters. And the other guy, when he comes back in, has to pitch to three batters or finish an inning. And so it's a little bit tricky. And so I won't say we'll never see it again, because there is the loophole that if you end an inning, you don't have to face three batters. So it's a possibility, but you run the risk. If you get two outs and you've got a lefty coming up and you want to bring in your lefty reliever and you move the other guy to first base, Well, then if the lefty doesn't get his guy, he has to stay in the game anyway, but now you're also weakened defensively. So we may never see another Waxahachie swap, at least until and unless Major League Baseball recognizes that the three-batter minimum is not the best rule and they get rid of it. But it's a fun little thing, and it's fun when we do see it. And I enjoyed digging into the history of the only time the Dodgers did it in 1991 with Roger McDowell. And I hope you guys enjoyed hearing me dig into that. That's going to do it for me today. I want to thank you again for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. It means the world to us. If we're not your first listen every day, go ahead and fix that. We're in your inbox wherever you get your podcasts by like 1 a.m. California time every weekday morning. So whatever you're doing first thing in the morning, Locked On Dodgers is ready to be your first listen every day. Today, for your second listen, check out Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. It's free and available on all platforms. Again, if you're not listening to or watching Locked On Dodgers every day, please add 1 or 2 days a month to your rotation. If you have friends or family who love the Dodgers, tell them about the show and maybe they'll enjoy it too. You can follow us on Instagram and on Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Samperio. I'm on Twitter at Snydog, and the DMs are open in all of those places. Our email address is lockedondodgers@gmail.com, and our phone number for voicemails or texts is 323-863-LOCK-5625. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be here with us. When you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree, you just have to listen. We'll talk to you on Monday.